A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate
space.
On Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 150. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television and spin-offs of science fiction television today, as we are continuing our discussion of the Gerry Anderson-based comics. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So there was an extremely popular run of comics based on the television shows produced by Gerry Anderson in the 1960s and 1970s. And these ran in a variety of different comic books, and they covered Stingray, Fireball XL5, Thunderbirds, Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, and a number of others as well.
That's right. An awful lot of comics, an awful lot of different shows covered. Quite a big history, really, of all the various Gerry Anderson comics, and we may not be able to get to all of it, but we are certainly going to try our best to summarise it. And as we mentioned in our last episodes, the comics themselves feature some of the great British artists from comic book work from the 60s who crop up throughout these various collections we've been looking at.
Yes, absolutely.
But first, a correction. In our last episode, unfortunately, I got my Franks mixed up. And for all of those who were shouting at your iPods, yes, you're quite right. It was Frank Hampson who was the famous creator of Dan Dare in Eagle Comic. And then Frank Bellamy, who later took over the artwork in the 1960s. So apologies for that. As I said, both of them were famous artists who did some work on the Gerry Anderson comics that we're talking about. So, as I say, lots of different publications covered the Gerry Anderson shows over the years, so lots of different strips. We'll mention some of the particular comics we've been talking about and looking at. So, last time we talked about TV Comic, a very long-running and successful comic in the UK that ran from 1952 to 1984 and used to cover popular television shows from the time, lots of short little comedy strips. It was the home for Doctor Who comics, I believe, Brian, from 64 to 69 and again from 74 to 79.
That's right. And it ran some comics based on Four Feather Falls, which was the Gerry Anderson Western show, very early one, and also Supercar and Fireball XL5. So some of the early Gerry Anderson Super Marionation shows were covered in this one.
That's right. Alongside all these various short little comedy sort of comics, more traditional comics as well.
Yes, absolutely. And then there was a big change in 1965 when TV Century 21 came out, which was later called TV 21, and it ran from 1965 to 1971. And it was actually run by Gerry Anderson's own Century 21 television company. And it was presented as a tabloid newspaper from the future that had articles in it, and it had a front cover with headlines and color images and photos from the TV show. And that was partially a big deal, that it had these color photos from the TV show, because a lot of children who were viewing this only had black and white televisions at that point.
That's right, yes. Black and white television, probably here in the UK, the norm, I think, in the 60s. So, yes, to actually see these comic strips in full and rather glorious colour would have been quite something, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And they used this idea that they would make the characters from the television shows not look like the puppets, although they would look a little bit like the puppets, but they would draw them as regular comic book characters. In particular, that meant the earlier shows up through Thunderbirds, the Super Marionation puppets had rather unusual proportions. They had sort of larger heads and smaller bodies because that was how the puppets worked. But in the comic book strips, they would not do that. They proportioned them like humans.
Yes, a very deliberate decision to make them look like normal human characters and to draw them in classical sort of comic book style. So as you say, yes, they have to get rid of the large-headed puppets appearance from the early shows. And of course, that they then had to reflect that in some of the images they reproduced from the shows themselves. So whereas we would see the Captain Scarlet puppets, I don't think we ever saw the Thunderbird puppets appear in the actual comic or actually pictures of them, Brian.
Yes, once Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons came out, it featured puppets that did have human-type proportions just because of they were able to do that with the technology by that point. So once Captain Scarlet came out, they would have photos of the Captain Scarlet puppets, but they would never have photos of the puppets from the earlier shows because they wouldn't look very good next to the Captain Scarlet puppets. It was quite a different look because of those proportions. So once Captain Scarlet was introduced on TV and in the comics, they would have in their photographs only Captain Scarlet puppets, but they would have photos of the vehicles from some of the earlier ones. In the actual illustrated comics, that was not a problem because they were doing more human proportions right from the beginning.
Okay, and as we've said always when we discuss the Gerry Anderson puppet shows and the live action shows, the vehicles were a very important part of the success of those shows. We've talked about the various toys that were produced, but obviously in a comic book, it was a perfect medium for these sort of cutaway diagrams and illustrations of the vehicles, telling you more about all these various cars and spaceships and so on. So that would be a regular feature of the comics, I think, Brian.
Yeah, and they would run 4 2-page comic strips in each issue, and then a story would run across several different issues.
Okay, so that was TV Century 21, or TV 21 as it became. We had a spin-off, literally a sister comic, Lady Penelope, which ran from 1966 to 1969. And here was the Andersons very deliberately trying to create a successful girls comic. And so this would feature stories of Lady Penelope from Thunderbirds with her chauffeur Parker, but also the Spectrum Angels from Captain Scarlet and Marina from Stingray. Appropriately enough, the Lady Penelope comic was edited by Gillian Allen, but it included many stories, again, written by Alan Fennell and illustrated by Frank Langford. So similar sort of artistic creators who'd been working on TV Century 21.
Yes, absolutely. And that fit very much into that shared universe that they were building for all of these Super Marionation shows from Gerry Anderson. They also had a Joe 90 comic book that ran in 1969.
That's right. probably not the most successful of the Gerry Anderson comics because it only lasted 34 issues and then it folded into TV 21. But that obviously covered the sort of reasonably successful spy-fi series Joe 90 about the child spy. So another interesting show and comic from the 1960s.
And then in the 1970s, 71 to 73, there was a comic book called Countdown. And this was a little bit different because by the early 1970s, Gerry Anderson and Sylvia Anderson were working with live action shows with UFO and later Space 1999. And this was a big proposition for them to get into. And they actually dropped the publishing arm at that. So TV Century 21 disappeared in 1971. It was TV 21 at that point. And some of the people involved went off and started Countdown. So Dennis Hooper and Roger Perry, who had been with Century 21's publishing wing, they started this Countdown book in 1971. and it was more of a serious sci-fi comic. It had its own series called Countdown, and it did some things with some imagery and design from 2001 A Space Odyssey, I believe. And also included some television series-based comic books as well, including UFO and some of the other Gerry Anderson comic books, and also including Doctor Who.
That's right, yes, Doctor Who jumped into another comic in the 70s. But yes, interesting stuff. UFO and some of the UFO strips from Countdown are featured in the Gerry Anderson Century 21 collections that we've been looking at and talking about. So that was Countdown. We have often mentioned Lookin magazine, which was ITV's television sort of children's comic that ran from 1971 all the way through to 1994 and ran comic strips based on several genre shows that we've touched upon. But two of the Gerry Anderson shows we'll mention in particular. It ran Space 1999 comics, and later on in the 80s would run a Terrahawk strip, one of Gerry Anderson's later puppet shows, which wasn't in Super Marination. It was called something else then, I think, Brian, in the 80s.
Super Macromation, I think?
Something like that. I think you're correct, yes.
It was using hand puppets instead of marionettes, I believe. It was a different technique. Lookin magazine also featured shows like Time Slip and Sapphire and Steel. So it certainly covered quite a bit of science fiction from ITV shows. There was a long-standing publishing company called Charlton Comics, and they ran a Space 1999 comic book series from 75 to 76. They had seven issues of it. It was in color and oriented more or less as a children's comic. And then they also did an eight-issue run of a Space 1999 black and white magazine comic, which had more adult stories in it. And it also ran from November 75 to November 76.
And then still sticking with Space 1999, we can't go without mentioning a recent revival of Space 1999 comics from Archaea Press, the comic book company. And they've been working on two different themes, I suppose, Brian. They have their Classics Remastered, which is modified and sort of updated versions of those classic comics that you've been just talking about, the Charlton comics and some of the Lookin strips. And this is with some up-to-date remastering, recoloring. And then the other project from Archaea Press is Aftershock and Awe, which starts with an adaptation of the original TV pilot episode, Breakaway, and then goes on into a new story called Aftershock, which deals, I think, with some of the other features, like what was going on Earth after the moon was blasted out of orbit in the first episode of Space 1999. So it's an interesting ongoing project there from Archaea Press.
Yes, they have some interesting things that have just been coming out quite recently. So we should talk about this shared universe of the TV Century 21 comic books, because they did some interesting things with it. In particular, they had the big organizations. Many of the Gerry Anderson shows involved a big organization that would be, or sometimes a smaller organization, that would be doing the work and the missions and the things that are featured in the television shows. So you had the World Space Patrol from Fireball XL5, the World Aquanaut Security Patrol from Stingray doing undersea stuff, Spectrum from Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, and of course International Rescue from Thunderbirds. And in the comic books of TV Century 21, all of these organizations worked with each other, and they were all aware of each other and communicated with each other and would come to each other's aid at times, and that really helped to bring these connections in.
That's right, yes. This this very clever idea from Anderson and his
art editor at Century 21 Publishing, that the comics would put all this stuff together. And then, as you say, they would then report that back to us in the comic book form, which was supposed to be a comic book that was being transmitted from the future back to us in 1965. And it also introduced other bits and pieces like the Zero X spaceship. This was something that was featured, I believe, in the Thunderbirds Argo movie. And it was a link between Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet, which was, I think, briefly referred to in the TV show, but was very clearly shown as part of this shared universe in the comics, Brian.
Yes, that's right. They had some very small references in the TV show about there being a connection, but it was really brought to the fore in the comics.
And of course, this allowed them to crossover stories from one strip to another. So, for instance, if there was an underwater menace, Stingray and Thunderbird 4 would be able to investigate. Likewise, Lady Penelope and Parker might be called upon to solve one of the sort of spy aspects of a story that involved Fireball XL5, for instance. So there was lots of little nice crossovers, and vehicles from one story or one show would appear in another show's comic strip. And quite, you know, fun stuff as it shared this universe.
Yes, absolutely. There were also a number of memorable villains and alien races that were introduced in these comic books. The Bereznik were a rogue Eastern European state that caused trouble for many of the Earthbound characters that would show up in Thunderbirds, for example, causing interesting complications. You had the Astrons, who were sort of floating jelly bean-like creatures, you know, very different. You had a bunch of large monsters on Venus. You had a variety of different things. The rock snakes from Mars, from Thunderbirds Argo, also appeared in the comic books.
That's right. And then we've got, as you say, a giant monsters, memorably a strip featuring the giant ants, which showed up in Fireball XL5. And we had an alien race called the Krexans, a tentacled race who would menace both Fireball XL5 and the Thunderbirds. So, you know, there they are, as well as sharing the universe. They've got to come up with some memorable baddies and monsters, and they're doing a pretty good job and producing some memorable stuff.
Yes, they definitely sort of stretched and broadened out the universe and the style and the stories compared to what they were able to do on television.
Which brings us neatly to some of the stories. And as you say, the comic books allowed them to stretch out and expand on stuff from the television show. So, for instance, in the TV show Stingray, a fearsome underwater prison called Aquatraz was mentioned. And that enabled the comic book writers to come up with a storyline called Escape from Aquatraz, which obviously would put the Stingray crew in considerable danger and would carry on for several weeks in the pages of TV Century 21.
That was definitely an exciting kids comic in the 1960s tradition.
Absolutely. You've mentioned the weird floating jelly beans known as the Astrons, and in a storyline called the Astron Assassination, we see the crew of Fireball XL5 trying to make peace with the Astrons, and then the Astron ambassador is assassinated in a scene from the mid-60s, which would have been sadly very familiar, because it does sort of deliberately hark back to the assassination of JFK. And looking at the images in the comic book, you can't help but see things from like the Zapruder film and all the images that have become so famous from the assassination of JFK in 1963. And of course, that would also allow for a crossover, because Lady Penelope would then be called upon to help solve the mystery of who shot the Astron ambassador. And we've also talked about Zero X, this spaceship from both Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet. And we get a story called The Ghosts of Saturn, in which the crew of the Zero X spaceship have to face the sort of the menace of a deadly computer on the planet Saturn. So another interesting ongoing storyline.
Oh, yes. We also had Destination Sun, which was quite an epic Thunderbirds story where something is going wrong with the sun and causing all sorts of problems, and International Rescue is called upon to investigate, and of course Brains is involved, and Thunderbird 3 is called upon, and just about all of the Thunderbirds crafts and the Tracy brothers are called into action for this ongoing story that starts with this thing with the sun and then goes into something that becomes rather difficult for the Thunderbirds themselves to get out of, and it becomes something that segues into all sorts of international rescue action there, which does not have the strongest science in it, shall we say, but it certainly has some fun stuff.
Okay, interesting and fun.
Yeah, there was also a fun one called Unity, which was a Captain Scarlet story with Spectrum facing a threat that will actually bring them right through the territory of Stingray and eventually bring the Fireball XL5 organization, I believe with Fireball XL2 in this case. But it starts bringing these things together and having crossover moments with some of the characters. And this was released soon after Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons started airing. So it really pushed this idea that, yes, this show was involved with everything else in the shared universe, and gave us some fun stuff there as well.
And it's a good, big, fun story, Unity, as you say, that sort of, again, plays in this sandbox of a shared universe. It's great stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
So away from the shared universe stuff, we were also talking about the UFO in Space 1999 comics. We've mentioned briefly as we've gone along that UFO, Gerry Anderson's first live-action television show, had a series of comic strips running in Countdown, mainly black and white. A couple of them crop up in these collections we've been looking at. Art by Brian Lewis and Martin Asbury. And quite interestingly, I think, because first of all, the art is quite realistic. There's sort of recognisably characters like Ed Bishop and Brian Sewell, the actors from UFO. You can recognise them quite instantly from this artwork. And it did also help to fill out some of the sort of background of the UFO menace from that show. I think when we covered that show, we commented on some of the inconsistencies between episodes in terms of how the alien menace was portrayed. And some of those questions, I think, answered in the comic strip.
Oh, I see. Interesting. We also mentioned some of the Space 1999 comics that are now being reprinted. The Archaea Space 1999 Classics Remastered series is using some of the old comics, some of which were based on the original TV shows and some of which were not, but it's pulling these threads of the comic books and the TV episodes together and using some updated versions of some of the artwork and some of the dialogue and captions there. It does some really neat things in it, bringing Series 1 of Space 1999 and Series 2 of Space 1999, which are very different, and this helps to bridge them quite a bit. It brings some of the Series 1 characters and the Series 2 characters together. It tells you a little bit more about the fate of some of the Series 1 characters that disappeared. It gives you some log entries from the various characters, as they did on TV with Series 2, with Dr. Helena Russell doing her logs and sort of introducing things with a bit of a narration in most of the episodes. They did that with her in the comics, but also had Commander Koenig himself doing logs, and Victor Bergman and Tony Verdeschi, and Paul was doing log entries. They had a bunch of these that give you some good character perspectives and fill in some of the events that happened between Series 1 and Series 2, and got into some interesting stuff.
So interesting stuff, filling out the Space 1999 universe. And again, as you say, answering some of the sort of puzzles or riddles from the TV show.
Yes, absolutely. And Archaea is also doing a Space 1999 series called Aftershock and Awe. This is complete now. It was a 5-issue piece that was released in separate issues online and then released as a collection, which is available. And it has two separate stories. The first one is called Awe, and it adapts Breakaway, which was the pilot episode of Space 1999. But it includes some of the pieces that were deleted. The original director's cut of Breakaway was over 2 hours long, and the transmitted version was about 50 minutes long. Apparently, that original longer version had lots of problems with it, so it needed to be edited, and they shot some new footage, and so on. But there were some interesting things that were in the original version and not broadcast, and those have been used in some of the novels, and they were also used in here, so that helped to add a little bit more detail to things and a little bit more to the characters. And there's some original material that helps with that as well. And in fact, they also made some effort to improve the plausibility in scientific terms of Space 1999. The event that kicks things off in Space 1999 is that the moon is torn out of Earth orbit. And this is something that a lot of people have seen issues with, that the moon would have broken up with anything that would have torn it out of Earth orbit, then how could the moon have gotten so far away from Earth so quickly, and so on. Well, there is something included in this version that helps to explain those and at least improve the plausibility a little bit.
Okay, as ever, interesting background stuff for Space 1999.
Yeah, that's right. And then Aftershock, which was the other three of the 5 issues of this, tells the story of what was happening on Earth for actually a number of decades before the moon breaks out of Earth orbit, and continues to talk about what happened after the moon broke out of Earth orbit, and sort of sets things up so we have like an alternate history line of what happened on Earth, starting back in the 1960s and going to more or less the present day. And it's interesting because Space 1999, of course, originally was from the 1970s, so it was talking about the future. And now we're talking about a recent alternate history line. And like I say, they go back and started changing things in the 1960s, and we end up with a very different world that includes the events of Space 1999 up into the present. And of course, when the moon is torn out of Earth orbit, that causes enormous problems back on the Earth. And they reference these a little bit on TV in Space 1999, where you hear a brief broadcast news clip talking about some of the problems that occur. But they go into it in much more detail with this very interesting Aftershock comic book.
Okay, fascinating stuff.
We should talk a little bit about what is in the archives and the state of things for the Gerry Anderson comic books. Many of the original artwork boards from TV Century 21, the comic book series, have actually survived in the Century 21 archive in Slough, and there were also some in private collections. And this has allowed some very good collection work to go back and look at these original pieces of artwork rather than the published comic books.
That's right, and it's the comics historian Chris Bentley who we have to thank for tracking this down and getting the various permissions to reproduce this art in its all its glory in these rather beautiful 5 collected editions featuring comic strips from Century 21 and from some of the other comics we've been talking about. And they're lovely stuff. They are certainly, if you are at all interested in the shows themselves or in a little bit of British comic book history, then they're well worth tracking down one or more of these volumes, because they really are quite beautiful things. Likewise, if you're interested in the Dalek Chronicles, they are out there. You can find, hopefully, the Marvel collection if you're willing to look for it on eBay and spend a little bit of money. Or, as I've said before, they can be found on the internet. And interestingly, there's also on the internet, there's a CGI animation project, which is animating stories from the Dalek Chronicles comic book strip. But also, as we've mentioned in our last episode, it's well worth watching the documentary Stripped for Action about the Dalek comics.
Yes, very exciting. And Archaea, as we mentioned, is doing the Classics Remastered and Aftershock and Awe, and those are 2012 and 2013 publications, so quite recent stuff, and they are available from Comixology, so if you use the app on a phone or a tablet for looking at those, you can buy them there. You can also buy printed versions. There is a collection of Aftershock and Awe that is available as a hard copy or on Comixology as a digital version.
Okay, so we will get to talk now about some of the good and bad bits that we found about looking at these Gerry Anderson comics that we've been discussing. How would you like to start us off, Brian? What particularly stood out to you from these collections?
Well, there's a wide variety of stuff that we're looking at here. Looking at these collections of the 1960s material, the collections themselves are certainly beautifully done and have very good color. And there's some good art in there from that sort of 1960s comic book era. It's an unusually good quality glimpse at what was being done at that time.
Yes, it is. I mean, it is quite 60s stuff. But if you liked the look of the painted images at the end of Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons, that will give you an idea of what you're sort of going to be seeing in some of these collections. It is quite, in places, quite beautiful and spectacular. There's some other stuff which is a bit more, as you could say, I suppose, run-of-the-mill comic book work. But in amongst there are some gems. And of course, we've got some of these interesting story ideas and this sort of beautiful way that they've tied the Gerry Anderson universe together.
Yes, absolutely. It's definitely something where they built something that feels like the comic book universe from the Marvel superhero universe or the DC superhero universe, except instead of being focused on superheroes, they're focused on alien invasions and space missions and rescue operations and undersea missions, these sorts of things that were big in 1960s science fiction and 1960s supermarionation shows from Gerry Anderson.
Okay. I suppose on the downside, Brian, we would have to point out that they are essentially children's comics. These are reproductions of children's comic book stuff, and so therefore it may not appeal to all. Although I suppose the exception might be the recent Space 1999 stuff, which is perhaps much more interesting to the modern comic book fan.
Yes, the collections, which are mostly 1960s material, there is some good stuff in there, but they are children's comics, and the stories in them are children's comic book fare, and it's fun, but I find that the stories and writing does not stand up to a great deal of scrutiny in most cases, and you need to look at them as being what they are. They were fun stories for children from that era, and they do some neat things with it in that context.
Okay. I guess, as we've said before, it is a big, big subject, and we've only been able to touch on the edges of some of this work. There's a long history of comic strips following or featuring the TV shows of Gerry Anderson. And as ever, if you know more about some of the specific details or you want to correct us on anything, then please do get in touch.
Yes, absolutely. And I do have to say, on the Space 1999 stuff, the Classics Remastered series is quite good at playing into what was on television and doing some neat things with the characters. So while some of the stories have sort of an old 1970s comic book children's kind of feel to it, some of them are quite strong, and they do some neat things with the television content. While the new series, Aftershock and Awe, or the new short-run collection, Aftershock and Awe, is very good indeed, and it does some very strong work in the storytelling and the writing and also the artwork, getting to see what happens on Earth in the world of Space 1999, and also giving us an updated take on that pilot episode. So that collection, Aftershock and Awe, was definitely a highlight for me.
Okay. So, recommendations, Brian. It's difficult to summarize the whole sort of breadth of Gerry Anderson comics, but if people wanted to look at this a bit more, which bits and pieces would you point them to first?
Well, it's, as you say, an interesting thing to look at because it is so broad, and it would depend on what your interests are. If you're interested in seeing some classic children's comic book work in science fiction, then these collections of the 1960s comics are great. They are children's comic books, so that's very much a matter of taste. If you are a completist or if you have an interest in those sorts of comic books, then absolutely go for those. If you are interested in Space 1999, if you enjoyed that series, then the Classics Remastered has some pretty good stuff there in tying things together. But I would definitely say I would most recommend Aftershock and Awe. Even if you don't know Space 1999, it's just a very good comic book collection. If you do know Space 1999, it's a really interesting new take on the world of Space 1999 and does a very good job with it. It's really quite strong.
Okay. I would say that if you have an interest in the shows of Gerry Anderson, particularly the Super Marionation shows, then it's well worth having a look at one of these beautiful collected editions. You've got five to choose from. They do stand alone, so you can pick out any one that you can get hold of easily and start with that. I would say that it's certainly worth having a look at the Doctor Who Stripped for Action documentary about the Dalek Chronicles. And as you say yourself, Brian, if you're into more recent comics and you've got the Comixology app, then Space 1999 Aftershock and Awe may well be worth checking out.
Yes, definitely some good stuff there in digital format or as the print collection as well. So, in summary, Gerry and Sylvia Anderson built a number of Super Marionation series in the 1960s that featured space travel and alien invasions and undersea travel and rescue work. And in the mid-1960s, they put together a comic book version of all of these series that all continued to run at the same time in comic book form rather than one after the other, and all related to each other. And they built this involved shared universe that gave us some fun 1960s children's comic book fare that gave us some very nice artwork that's still there in these great collections. And the comic books lived on in the Space 1999 comics and other things, and gave us some new things that are still being done in these remixed Classics Remastered, and also in brand new stories in the Space 1999 universe, both on Earth and on the Moon in Space 1999 tradition.
Okay, great stuff. It's been interesting to talk about these comics. Do join us next time when we're going back to science fiction television from the UK,
and we're looking at a BBC show from 2011, Outcasts, an interesting show that lasted one series and perhaps teased some of our discussion. We'll be particularly talking about why it didn't get a second series.
Yes, something a little bit different for us to talk about next time, for sure. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you can find us along with some other podcasts. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there as well.
And you can find us on the Voice of Geeks streaming radio on the internet at vognetwork.com, and do come and join us there as well.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada saying Spectrum is green.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, it's Eamon in England saying Thunderbirds are go.